Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
LaFondra looking to get close side of Font. LaFondra away from Davis. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello, everyone. Happy Easter and welcome back to another episode of the Elm Park Royals post-match podcast, brought to you, of course, by Blue Collar Street Food, which we were indulging in yet again yesterday, post-match and before the match. It's the best way to kick off a Reading FC weekend. Yesterday, Northampton, we took home a very brilliant 1-0 win. It's been a good week, exclusivity announced, and also now staying 6 points clear of the relegation zone. To talk over the game yesterday, I am joined today by Alex Everson and Paul Mann. How are you both doing?
Fine. Excellent. Couldn't be better. Life is good. Exclusivity signed. Progress on that. If you want to listen to our podcast talking about that, go back and listen to that as well. But yesterday, really tough match. Enjoyed it. Blue Collar was great. Highly recommend going there. The burger was sensational, really good. And lovely to see so many Reading fans in there as well before pre-match.
There were a lot of Reading shirts in Blue Collar, Alex, before the game. It was good to see.
Yeah, and it was a really big crowd as well yesterday in the end of the game, which was nice to see as well. I think that was the second or third biggest crowd of the season. Again, I think we've had... I read something last night about the fact that we've had 8 games now which have been either a Saturday or a bank holiday since Christmas, roughly, and the last 8 have now been all over 14,000.
Good signs. It's good signs. Well, it was, of course, a very... it was, of course, a very good week, obviously, with exclusivity being announced earlier in the week. Paul, did that give you a spring in your step going to the game?
Yeah, definitely. Who wouldn't? We've had so much depression, you know. Yeah, I know it's nowhere near done. God, I can't speak. But you do wonder, how it's going to affect the crowd, and you know, as it kind of like take the edge off it slightly. But honestly, I thought the atmosphere yesterday was really, it was one of the best ones we've had at points. And the fact that Y25 and Y26 was so full just made a massive difference to the whole atmosphere yesterday, I thought.
Oh, I've been waiting for this for so long. I've been waiting for so long for Y25 and Y26 to be full again. And it's so much fun. For years, I've been sat there at the top of Y25 and there's rows and rows of empty seats in front of me. And all of a sudden, over the last 6 weeks, they're now full. And it's brilliant that Y25 and Y26 is selling out again. I hope it keeps selling out for the last 2 games of the season, and you know, people come back and buy those seats next season.
Definitely. Well, I think some of the stay awayers might have started to come back yesterday, which is very good to see. Fingers crossed, you know, we can keep these attendances up and atmospheres, and we can push forwards and almost start a new page really for Reading FC. But yesterday, no changes to the starting 11. Was there really any reason to change after a 4-0 win, obviously, against Cambridge before the international break? I can't really think there was any reason to change it, Paul. It was pretty standard. I think you're not changing it after 4-0 wins, are you?
No. I didn't think there was any real kind of debate even within the fan base online. I don't think anyone was thinking there was going to be any need there. Maybe when we come to the game on Monday, maybe there will be that, but we'll probably cover that a little bit later in the podcast. What about you, Alex? Did you think that, you know, all okay with the lineup?
Yeah, I thought David Button might come back in. I know, obviously, Pereira kept the clean sheet against Cambridge and he did play well against Derby as well. But I thought perhaps, you know, maybe Sellers would move David Button back in if it was purely just an illness thing. But seemingly, you know, Pereira's done enough to earn the shirt, as it were, for now. And I can't see him being dropped now going forwards because he's playing well. So why would you drop him? I wasn't really hoping that Pereira would be, you know, benched yesterday, but I thought maybe he might be just if it was just an illness before the international break. But yeah, seemingly, you know, we've mentioned it a couple of times that the 11 seems to have settled in, and it seems to be a very consistent 8-9 players nearly every week, right? The only real kind of, I don't even know if it's a surprise, but I think Michael Craig has dropped out of the starting 11 a bit in the last, what, month or so. Charlie Savage seems to have kind of cemented a starting 11 space, and I think he's making most of it as well.
I think probably one of the most surprising then, actually, outside of that, is one man that we've not mentioned. He was back in the starting 11 yesterday, was Tom Holmes. Tom Holmes came back into the starting 18, sorry, the squad, not into the starting 11, but he was on the bench, but didn't obviously come back into the squad. But to be honest, when you've got Bindon, you've got Mbenge playing as well as they are, I'm almost wondering if we're going to see Tom Holmes again this season.
I don't think we'll see him play. I think maybe he'll come off the bench at some point, but that's going to be the most we'll see of him. I'd be very surprised to see him start in any game, unless we end up safe with three games to go, let's say, and maybe he starts one of those like last couple of games. But I can't see him playing until it doesn't matter, almost, if that makes sense. I think it's just going to be a squad option. And the other kind of on that is like, what would be the reason to play him? As well, he's not our player ultimately anymore. Like, there's no
value industry,
a lone player. He's not going to be here in 6 weeks' time, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. But I just think we should have 1 minute's appreciation for Tyler Bindon. He's got a lot of love this season. He had a dip, which you would expect totally from a young player. No player has like completely amazing performances every single week. But wow. He must be attracting interest from other clubs, and quite rightly so, because he looks really impressive. The way that he's improved so much since his first appearance, and his composure on the ball, doesn't always make the right decisions on his final pass still, but is just what he's done through this season. For me, he has to be in the top three for player of the season. He's like that silent player who doesn't really get mentioned much, but you're over in Gamarsen Court earlier in the season there.
I got Alex. Mocked mercilessly for this, and I'm going to be proven right. He's a quality
player. Still League One, though. I've got to say, it's still League One.
No, I agree. It's more the fact that it's, to be honest, I don't even necessarily think that he's going to be like a... He's not. Is he going to be the same quality? Who knows? Maybe, maybe not. But it's the way he plays, to me. His positioning is just ridiculous. He doesn't have a turn of pace like in Mbengue or Abido particularly. And I think he basically has to make up for that with being well positioned every time. And I think that pretty much is where I can see the similarity between the two of them. I think he's such a good player. I'd be really disappointed if he was sold in summer, but I can understand it because he must be getting interest from teams higher up in the pyramid at this point. And I know he's got 1 year left on his deal after this summer, so it would make sense to cash in if a team comes in and offers us, you know, a decent sum of money for him. But yeah, he's been so consistent now for 3 months, pretty much, I think. He's, you know, just think he's been a quality signing. And, you know, when we look back at last June or July or whenever it was he signed, and I thought why are they announcing an under 19s player like this with a video and an interview and stuff? It seems all a bit OTT, but you know, I think he's proven everybody wrong this season. It's been an absolutely fantastic signing on a free.
He's been just incredible, I think, and one of the biggest things that impressed me yesterday was just actually his strength, because I think that's one of the things that we were looking at earlier in the season. You know, he's quite slight, 18, obviously earlier in the season. He's going to be like that. He's not fully developed really as a player. You know, he's coming up against 25, 26, 30, 32 year old players. They're going to give him a bit of hustle and bustle, but the way he dealt with Apare up top yesterday, there were so many times when they were just shoulder to shoulder and he just won it so easily. And, you know, Apare, 6 foot striker, your typical League One kind of nuisance really of a striker. And he just dealt with it fantastically. And yeah, I think all the plaudits for Bindon, I think, are so so deserved because he's absolutely fantastic. But Mbenge, his partner, I saw him getting comparisons yesterday to Sonko as well. We might be going a little bit overboard with these comparisons really at this time. But yeah, it's
the thing I love about Mbenge at the minute is the way that he throws it. And actually, to be fair, it's not just Mbenge, it's multiple players, but like he throws himself at blocks and tackles. He really has no kind of like hesitation to like to pull out of a challenge or not put in a block. He always puts himself on the line for everything, which I, you know, really, really like about him, Bull. Obviously, yeah, the reaction from the fans helps.
I mean, there was times yesterday when Tyler Bindon, you know, as what happens normally in football, a player gets slightly caught out of position, or, you know, the fast flowing football, isn't it? You're going to need those cover and tackles. And Mbenge was just there to sweep it up. And I just love the whole energy of the team. You know, as I've said loads of times before, they won't always win and they will lose some games, but it's not going to be through lack of effort and organisation. They look tight now. They look like a unit. And you look at all those young players in that team, Selas and the coaching team have improved so many of them. It's not a coincidence. You look at all of them across the, you know, Bindon, you look at Dorset, you look at Mbenge. There's so many. I mean, Savage, I would say, has improved. Kelvin is improving. Aziz definitely hasn't done the same. I mean, he's just done an incredible job. He really, really has. And if you look at, I think it was Talk Reading who put the stat out, since the Shrewsbury Town match, I think we'd be fifth in the league, which is crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Alex's claims from the exclusivity podcast of hopes for next season of pushing for a playoff place.
We're a good side. I think everybody recognises it at this point, right? Especially Reading fans. I know opposition fans don't necessarily see it yet, but we are a good side. We win a lot of games. If you take away that first, not even first, but if you take away September and October, we've been pretty good and pretty consistent most of the season now at this point. Yeah. Next season could be exciting. I'm not saying it will be, but it could be.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of the groundwork there, isn't it now?
A lot of the excitement, Paul, has to be based on where the new owners come in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, and there was more on that, Alex, today, wasn't there, about the Bearwood training ground and some kind of from Company's House. Can you explain that, please? Because you'll do a better job of it than me.
I will try my best, yeah. So the obviously, with the news of exclusivity, the club has been loaned money from the new potential owners. The new owners have basically taken out a charge against Bearwood, the property, the company Bearwood Park, and loaned money against it, essentially. So it's a bit like, you know, if you use your house as a guarantee for a loan, similar kind of thing. So it confirms the fact that Redwood Holdings are the company who are interested in purchasing the club. The person who's in charge of Redwood Holdings is a guy called Leo Rifkin. He was a director at Charlton up until last summer. He was not the owner. He was a broker. He was part of a group, but he wasn't the money person behind it. He's a lawyer, essentially. So it doesn't seem like he's the investor, but it seems like he's the person who's dealing with the potential purchases of the club, with, you know, other investors behind him who are actually putting the money up. With that news, it kind of confirms the fact that the club has taken money off them, and at this point now, it's, you know, there's actual security against what they've loaned the club. So, you know, there's tangible progress there in terms of, say, you know, the sale of the club, and it's case of just now sitting and waiting and hoping for the best, I think.
So much positivity and so much positive news at the moment. It's hard to take in at the moment, but it's good news, very good news on the Bearwood front. So hopefully we can see some progress on that over the coming weeks. Let's have a look. Well, let's dive into the game a little bit. We've had a bit of chit chat around a few players and the positivity that's with Reading FC, but the game started yesterday. It felt quite end-to-end. It felt quite open. But one thing that was brilliant early doors was the atmosphere. You know, as Alex said earlier, Y25, 26, Club 18, 71 were all full. It was brilliant to see. And it was a really, really good atmosphere for the start of the game. And our first real chance came about 26 minutes in. Paul, Harvey Nibbs had a lovely little turn of skill, which we don't normally see from Harvey Nibbs. He's a bit of a workhorse, bit of a player that does all the dirty work. He'll do all that, he'll put the yards in, but you don't normally see that little turn of skill, but makes a lovely little turn and ball into to Smith. Cleared nearly off the line, however you want to put it in, by the Northampton defender, but then Charlie Savage follows in. Should he probably have done better there, do you think?
Yeah, maybe. If you watch it back, he does actually have time to have a touch, but that's so much easier to say here, isn't it? When you're sat here, when you're not on the pitch. I think the header from Smith is pretty good. It's a good bit of defending there. You've got to say they've, kind of predicted that's going to happen. Savage, he's completely shanked it, basically, as he's hit it into the ground and has gone way over the bar. He'd be disappointed with that. But overall, he did have a good game, but that moment wasn't his highlight, was it?
It wasn't. I was kind of wondering if it was going to be like a Portsmouth-esque type finish from Savage, but it wasn't quite. It wasn't quite. He did have a brilliant game there, so we're not going to ponder really on that miss too much. Alex, the next couple of actions that really came from that first half came from the Reading FC keeper. It brings me so much joy being able to say this and be able to talk about Joel Pereira. And he made a couple of very crucial saves, one from a one-on-one from Apare, where Dorset does very, very well, but then also a long-range shot from Hoskins, where he gets down to his right very well, very quickly, and makes a couple of brilliant saves. Let's talk a bit about Joel Pereira.
Yeah, it really pains me to know that Matt was right all along. I mean, he was right, but, it pains me. Slightly to
it's just nice being able to talk about a goalkeeper that's
they were both good saves though, weren't they? Less like when we look at them, they're both good saves. The one from Hoskins is the one where he's inside the area and he picks up the ball after a cross, puts it on his right foot and tries to put it in the bottom right hand corner. I think the speed of which he gets down is very impressive. I wouldn't necessarily expected David Button to get there. Perhaps he would have done, but it does feel like one of the kind of chances that we may have like let go and concede there yesterday. And obviously if we concede first yesterday, I think it's a different game. We weren't creating chances like in a huge abundance. The second one, obviously the save is very good from Pereira. I don't think it's necessarily all kind of down to him, the save. I think it's not a great shot from the one-on-one. I think Dorset does very well to get back to try and cover and put in a tackle. I think he does make a decent attempt of, although he doesn't block the ball, I think he does do enough to kind of put the put this striker off when he takes his shot. Obviously, the elephant in the room is the fact that we haven't discussed the fact that Bentley gives the ball away for a 2-on-1 from 40 yards away from our own corner. That moment really just was a complete clusterfuck, wasn't it, Paul? It just screams of not having awareness of what's going on around you there.
He does it quite a lot, though. He did it in the Cambridge match as well. He just gets possession of the ball and he's so comfortable on the ball, he seems to forget that other time players are playing at a different pace than him, and he lacks the intensity or game awareness. Was not surprising because he hasn't played that many games. Let's remember this. Or sometimes in this league and in any league, but particularly League One, you just have to get rid of that or play it back to the goalie. Just keep it really, really basic.
I think sometimes it comes across sometimes that he's got almost too much confidence in himself to keep the ball. And oftentimes it does work for him and he does manage to take the ball past 2-3 players without really ever looking like he's going to lose or looking like he might lose it, but then not losing it. And,
But when that ball came to him in the air, when the ball was coming towards him, I was thinking, I think I know what he's going to try and do here. And he did try and do it. And if you're a Northampton player, you must have like videos and watch this, analysis and thinking, just go to him every single time because he will try to do this. And sometimes, like I just said, I think you're right. I think he has so much self-belief that he thinks he can do it. And he can do it sometimes, but that's not the right moment to be doing it. You know, if you're 3-0 up, you know, last few minutes, you think, okay, you maybe try that, but not when it's 0-0. It's the management, isn't it, of his game. But he will learn that. And, you know, he's still a young player. So I'm not going to, like, bring him down and say it was terrible and all that. But I didn't like his energy after giving the ball away. But he'll also get kind of like, I'm sure Ruben will be on his case there. But weirdly, when Pereira actually, you know, saves the ball, because he hasn't really concerted and given all his 100% effort to get back, it actually falls to him and then he takes the ball out. So it's weird, isn't it, how these things all come together?
It was all part of the master plan, wasn't it? But what it did do was let us see some of Joel Pereira's ability, which was great to see. So good to see. And as
that was Matt Lansley praising officially happened on the EPR podcast.
I've always said it. I don't want to hate on David Button. I've never wanted to do it. I don't want to hate on goalkeepers ever. I want them to be good because it means that we've stayed in
a
game.
Let's move on.
Let's move on, indeed. Yes, Joel Pereira, congratulations. That was very, very good there. But the rest of the first half kind of petered out, really. It was quite a cagey first half, really. It was quite end-to-end, but no massive... Actually, well, you had the big chance for Savage and then obviously the one-on-one, which Pereira saves. But nothing really else kind of came of that. And the second half started and it was very similar. It was less end to end. The defences seemingly shored up a bit. We had a very early corner. Nothing came of it. But 59 minutes, Alex, Kelvin Iabatiman comes on. And it was probably the change that I think a lot of players or a lot of fans were probably thinking either at half time or probably after 55, 60 minutes to do, bring Elliot off, bring on Mukuru or Kelvin himself. And I mean, 5 minutes later, it paid off. So many times this season, Sellers has been criticised for his substitutions, etc. Got it. Bang on the money today. Well, yes.
Yeah, he did the business, didn't he, when he came on, Kelvin? It didn't take him long. And the goal is a fantastic goal on the left-hand side. The ball comes up, comes over to him from, I think it's Dorset, who kind of wins it near the corner flag and plays it back to Kelvin on the edge, like the corner of the box. And he kind of drags it back with his heel, like past the Northampton players. I think it's two of them. And he kind of like pulls it past both of them and then curls it with his right foot. Basically, you know, halfway around Berkshire, it felt like. It just went such a long way around, didn't it?
I think it pretty much went to the corner flag.
I think it clips right off the post as well, doesn't it, on the way in?
I think so. Yeah.
Roberto Carlos. Yeah, when he scored for Brazil against France, I think in like some tournament before Le Tournoi, maybe before 98 World Cup, that's like ridiculous bend on it. And you're thinking when we were stood there just watching, you thinking, okay, like fucking hell, that is an absolute, that's an incredible strike. That's Premier League level in that, but just that one moment, that was pure class.
I'm very jealous of those that were sat in the Dolan that would have been directly behind that, being able to see that curl, because I would have loved to, like, those angles where you get, where you're directly in line of it and you can just see it going in. I mean, Kelvin knows it's gone in by the immediately as he strikes. He's always right. He's jogging away and he already knows it's in. But I think the FIFA fans of our listeners might be able to sympathize with this or kind of realize where I'm going with this. It's like one of those shots which you make in FIFA and you just think there's just far too much curl on that. That is unrealistic. That would never happen in real life. But Kelvin has just done that. The amount of curl that man put on that ball was just stupid. It's just absolutely divine. That goal was just sensational. And I mean, the stadium erupted when that went in, Paul.
The feeling around the ground while that went in, it was just, it's just so magical, isn't it? That's why you go to the games, isn't it? It's just for that feeling of unity and just the kind of, it's us against everyone. And then when we get the goal of such quality, when we know we need it in a game we must win, It is just amazing. It's really hard to put it into words how you feel. It's a euphoric relief. And then after about 30 seconds or a minute, you're like, oh, don't fuck this up. Just like, keep going, isn't it? It's a weird kind of a set of emotions of extreme high to like, oh no, now we've got something. Let's cling on to it. But we didn't. That's one thing I'll say about Ruben's football as well. We don't sit back. You know, we don't go crazy when we go, you know, goal up in games. We kind of manage it in the right way.
Certainly of late. I think it was one thing that game management, obviously earlier in the season, was a bit of a problem. But of really the last 3-4 months, it's got so much better. The team is seeing out games so much better, so much almost easier, you know, than they did before. And maybe it's like say about the coaching that Sellers has put into this team, but for the rest of the game, Northampton didn't really have many chances. It felt very comfortable.
Yeah, I wasn't concerned about Northampton at all. And like, maybe it sounds a little bit kind of, you know, arrogant or whatever, but they had the two chances, which we've discussed. But apart from that, I can't really remember anything of them even in our box, let alone having a decent chance or anything. Granted, I think they're probably unfortunate not to have got a draw, because those two chances were really big. And we'd won. Did we deserve to win? Maybe not. But we did. But I don't remember them having a decent opportunity at all in the second half, even after we took the lead. If anything, we were probably unfortunate not to score again, I think, with a Aziz's shot.
Yes, well, Aziz had two shots. It was right at the end of the game. I mean, as we said, Reading did a great job of managing the game, really, and just limiting Northampton to very few chances and kind of nothing really of note that went to Pereira did have a couple of maybe wobbly moments where he slipped on a kick and maybe a bit unfortunate slice one kind of into Rosette in the Sir John Medeski stand. But apart from that, that was pretty much the extent of Northampton's pressure really in that second half, which was really nice to see. But Aziz had a really good shot. Keeper kind of makes a bit of a faff of it. It's one of those that maybe on another day that might end up going in. It might go just anywhere and it might just fly into the top corner, who knows, but then also hits the bar off the resulting corner pool. I mean, it would have been so nice just to have had that second goal just to kill the game, as you always say in football, right? Because you never want to be kind of in squeaky bum time in added time. But Aziz probably unlucky not to get a goal there from either of those chances.
Yeah, I was incredibly nervous. I'm not going to pretend I was not sat there thinking, oh, this is going to be fine, especially when they put up 7 minutes for injury time. I didn't really need that.
That's the worst sight in football, like, I'm sure of it. But, like, well, beside of seeing a last-minute winner against your team or last-minute points taken away from your team.
No. I didn't really need that. I mean, it probably was. There was a lot of time-wasting going on, basically, in substitutes and goals. I get all that, and there's no issue with that. But the goalie, Molden, kind of gets away with it with the first shot from Aziz, then goes out for the corner. Aziz then has the header at the far post after it gets flicked on, I think, by a Northampton player, actually. But
no, it was Sam Smith, actually. Sam Smith flicks it onto the back post. Smith.
Yeah, I think he does. I'm not quite sure if he... Yeah, maybe. But, yeah, maybe if he's a striker, he scores that one. But, yeah... I'm basically not going to criticise any of the players today because, you know, even though I gave a little bit of criticism to Ben Elliott, he's still, you know, doing his best and everything. So it would have been lovely to have that second though. And the atmosphere would have been fantastic at the end. It was still good anyway, but it would have been such a relief. That's what that goal would have brought. But we won, so it doesn't matter.
We did, Alex. We closed out the game. And I mean, we've talked about it quite a lot today. There were 15,451 inside the SCL yesterday. And the closing moments of the game, I mean, we've seen it a few times now from the crowd. But I mean, the atmosphere inside the ground for the last, you know, well, 10 minutes really of the game was something special yesterday.
It's really loud, isn't it, all of a sudden? Like when you compare it to earlier this season or even last season, seasons gone past in the last few years. It's yesterday, Cambridge, it sounds, and it's funny because obviously the stadium is actually still only 60% full at 15,000, but it sounds loud. So you can only imagine if we start, you know, if we start well in a season at some point in the next, maybe next season, maybe not, but if we start well in a season at some point and, you know, we're actually challenging at the right end of a league for once, you know, how loud that stadium could actually be and how good an atmosphere we could actually get, because the atmosphere at the minute is fantastic, I think, in the ground, which, you know, is crazy to think that we've only actually got 60% of the stadium full at the minute, Paul, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would be amazing to have 20,000 in there, and the sound would be just be glorious, wouldn't it? It really would be fantastic. And there was no better moment than that, I think, than probably with about 5 minutes to go, the challenge from a briefer, which you probably should win when you watch it back, you know, the emotions of being in the game. But the
Let's
challenge,
not take it away from a briefer, Paul. Come on.
I'm not taking it away from it at all. You know, give him a 5-year contract. Don't do that. Let's not get back into that world. But I just love the reaction of the crowd. The unity with the team is just amazing. And I would say it's the best kind of like link we've had in the connection with those two sets of things since the Brian McDermott era when we got promoted to the Premier League. Because, you know, I know Yapstam got us obviously to the playoff final, but there was always a little bit of disgruntlement and people weren't really enjoying it, which is a bit weird when you look back. It's kind of like unusual, but
leads on to a good question actually that we had from Laurie Johnston, who asked, is it the most likable? Yeah, we kind of discussed likable. I'm not going to like re-ask that one, but is it the most hardworking team that we've had since the promotion winning sides of the last, whatever, 15, 20 years?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely.
Be unanimous,
not
I think
only
this.
On the pitch, I would say it's hard work. You can see how much they've put into their development as well, Matt, can't you? Because as we mentioned earlier, so many players have improved.
They have. And I think this team has everything kind of, when you think of a Reading team, I mean, Alex and I have talked about this multiple times on long trudges away back and from away games and that. What's the most Reading FC team really since the Coppell days, the McDermott days? We always kind of go back to that Steve Clarke team that was hardworking. It was always front-footed. It was quick counter-attacking. That's what this team is as well. And I think that really helps. You know, we're not a possession-based team. You know, as much as kind of I think a lot of people might want us to see, you know, Guardiola-style football, this continental style that always gets talked about, Reading FC at the core of it has always been, I guess, you know, a high pressing team, playing it down the wings, fast counter-attacking team. That's just the DNA of the club when you think of the Reading way. And this Sellers team just, I think, epitomizes everything of that. When Sellers first came in, he talked about every game we will play to win. It doesn't matter if we're playing, you know, top of the table, middle of the table, bottom, or where we are in the table. We will go and we will try and win games. We will press high. We will try and make it uncomfortable for them. And that's just what you want to hear as a Reading fan, isn't it? You know, we just want to enjoy this style of football, really, that we've not realistically seen since the days of that Steve Clarke team, or even, you know, before that, you know, the McDermott team. I think it is the most likable since that McDermott team, since that promotion team. When you think of where we are on the table, you know, 17th at the moment in the league table, and we're comparing it to a team that won promotion to the Premier League, I think that just speaks as much volumes really about this team and how likable they are than any comparison really can make. I think it's just it's fantastic.
And is anyone more likable than Mr. Mbenge? The way he goes to the crowd at the end of the match.
He's called hero status, isn't he? Already,
it is.
I think.
I love that moment because you need that when kind of like, because for so many years we haven't had that. And the way he goes to 1871, and it's the same every time we win. He gets pushed towards it now because they all know he's going to do it. And he does his little dance and everything. I don't even know what it's called. I'm way too old to describe that. But I love it. I love it. But one thing I would change, and this is a little bit of a moan, not even a moan, just a thought, a pondering, can we stop playing the grandstand music when full time comes?
Oh, let the fans enjoy the atmosphere and the songs. Yeah. No, I completely agree. Well, on the subject of Mbenge, Alex, Matty Lovegrove put in a question, how good has Mbenge been since moving to centre-back? I mean, we covered it a bit at the start of the podcast around the comparisons to Sonko that I saw yesterday. I'd take it away.
So, you know, the funny thing is about Mbenge is that when he signed, I don't think anybody had him down as a centre back. I seem to remember the interview when he signed, and in said, oh, he's kind of played all over. He's played at centre back in France, he's played at right back, he's played in central defensive midfield. I don't really see him as a centre back though, and I see him as a... And I don't think Reading fans ever really appreciated the fact that he could potentially play centre back until he's been forced to play there in the last few months. And actually, he's a better centre back than he is any of the other positions he's played by quite a distance. He's not a right.
You had
back.
That moment on BBC Berkshire where he was asked about his position, and he said that he wants to play centre back.
But he is a better centre back than he is a right back or a defensive midfielder. He just is. He's got pace. He's not the perfect centre back by any means, but he's a decent player. I think realistically, I can't see Mbengue and Bindon both being here next season. I think it's unlikely. I think they're both just slightly too good to remain at Reading. It would be nice, but I think it's just unlikely. And it would be good to be able to build around one of them, though, next season, defensively. And then I think, you know...
Who would you choose to be that one? Sorry, Alex, just to jump in. Who would you choose that?
Yeah. I would pick Bindon. If you had to pick one, I would pick Bindon. Because I think the value on Bindon in... If you could give him a new 2 or 3 year deal, if he has another year next year and we end up being near the top of the table and he improves as much as he has this year, you could see his value being £4-5 million, I think, in a year's time.
Don't make me cry and say that Mbenga is going to go then. Oh, that would break my heart. I love that guy.
I think one of them... There has to be a chance that one of them goes, just on the basis of, they're just both very good players. It just seems unlikely that other clubs don't want them. But I think it then leads you on to the rest of the defence next season. And you talk about, if Mbengue and Bindon are both still here, great. You don't really need to go out and sign a centre-back or look for a centre-back particularly. Left-back, it feels like Dorthett has kind of nailed that position down. Even though he's not really a left-back by trade, he is playing very well at left-back. And I feel like maybe we go out and sign a left-back. And
even Mola, though, Mola's played well at back-up.
Mola's improved at left-back. It feels like we can probably make do at left-back if Dorthett is still here. And then right-back. What do you do at right back, Paul, next season?
Right back is... It's a tough position, isn't it? Because you've got a briefer there who comes on, hasn't really started that many matches. Yiddin, not sure.
I think Yiddin's played very well this season for the most part.
But next season, what's he going to be like? I don't know.
It is another year, isn't it? Like of Yiddin getting old. I think Yiddin, what is he now, 34? 33.
You could probably get another year, but you'd also want to see a briefer playing more matches and starting more matches as well.
Yep.
So that would be the ideal scenario, I feel, there. But who knows, because we don't know our budget or anything. I mean, in an ideal world, you'd probably get someone and he's better than both of them, but that's not going to happen.
I don't think that's good. Yeardog's got another year on his contract, and a briefer is a relatively good youth player. I'd be surprised if we signed the right back in summer. I'd like to see Yeardog and Abrifa rotating next season, potentially. And you basically let them battle out to find which of them is going to take that position long-term next season. One thing I would say about Abrifa, though,
he needs to improve when he gets into the final third. That's one thing I've noticed when he's playing. He's not particularly... He makes pretty very rash decisions there. So I think that's something that needs to be worked. And I'm sure Ruben is as well, so...
I think
it's crazy though to think though for
the minute.
Sorry, say it again, Alex.
I think he has a bit of a lack of confidence in the final third. He doesn't quite know what he wants to do in the final third a lot of the time. Defensively, I think he's quite good, but yeah, going forwards, he still definitely has an element to improve on.
I do think though, for a briefer, and I mean, it's a question that came in from Tom HS on Twitter around the future really of a briefer. What do we do with him next season? He's still 20 years old. He's not 21 until December this year. He's still super, super young. So whether that's a loan out or like you say, he comes in next season, he's rotated. I mean, you saw how much kind of love he had with that slight tackle he made, which I mean, Tom mentions on Twitter as well. Whatever we do, I think we're in a healthy position though there with a briefer.
I reckon you want him to get 15 to 20 starts next season, ideally, a briefer.
It'll be hard though, because if he doesn't go out, captain.
Yeah. If he's not the first choice right back next season, I think you still want him to be able to get 15, 20 starts and get decent game time at League One level next year, because otherwise you're starting to stunt him slightly, because he's been near this first team squad now for two seasons. So you want him to get some decent game time next season, I think.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, I think it's a good time to wrap it up there. We've had it's been joyous, I think, doing this podcast. It's so nice having them when we're nice and upbeat and we're positive, especially when it's a bank holiday weekend. We've had a bumper crowd, a great result, and we can look ahead to Bolton. Going to be a very tough game, obviously. Bolton, very, very good at home, but we're taking, I think, nearly 1,300 fans up to Bolton. Alex, myself will be going. Paul, will you be joining us? Have you decided yet? Are you going to be coming?
I've got some logistical issues. So,
fingers crossed.
We will see. Hopefully. Yes, hopefully. But, prediction-wise, I think we'd all of us take a draw right now from Bolton. Because, that's going to be a really tough game. And I know we beat them earlier in the season, but Bolton could have easily been 2 or 3 nil up in that first half. It was a long time ago. Things have changed. We're a better team than we were then, even though we won. But what do you think, Alex? I mean, surely you'd take a draw.
I would take a draw, definitely. I think there's a potential for us to be able to get 3 points there, though, actually. I don't think Bolton are playing quite as well as their league position suggests. Like, when you look at their recent results, they drew at Stevenage yesterday. I mean, they did batter Oxford, but I don't know how impressive that really is.
It doesn't matter how impressive it is. When they batter Oxford, we can all get behind that.
It's funny, but is it impressive? I don't know. You beat Cambridge, great. But they lost against Wigan, they lost against Blackpool quite comfortably. They had a really high-scoring game against Charlton. I think there's a potential that we can go there and pick up 3 points, potentially. Mm-hmm. But I would be more than happy with a draw, certainly.
Well, let's just make one last point here, that Tyler Bindon hates the Swindon. It just felt appropriate as we were talking about Oxford as well.
He certainly does that. He does. Well, we will be previewing the Bolton game ahead of that Easter Monday trip up to Bolton. As Alex said, I think they are beatable. They've got a lot of injuries. Dion Charles, Victor Adebiyeju, their goalkeeper Nathan Baxter as well. They've all been out the squad now for about 4 weeks. Some even longer than that, kind of coincided with their drop in form. But we will be doing a deep dive into the preview. It will probably be out Sunday midday sort of time. So be sure to go give that a listen when it comes out. Remember to give EPR a follow on all of our socials to keep up to date with the latest Reading FC and EPR content. But until the next time, we're going to sign off for now. I've been Matt Lansley. This has been the Elm Park Rules post-match podcast. And we'll catch you on the next one. Have a good Easter, everyone.